This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Apparently,
I had my own costume. That's why I got cast.
When you were being Kevin was casting this, he wanted to make sure that the actor that was cast would be able to invest in the character and not be judgmental about the character. And that was his priority. He didn't care, apparently, if they could sing or not. Was it easy for you to be that non-judgmental about an animated character that you have to play in that sort of heightened fashion?
It was easy for me. I don't know, everything sort of, I mean, I don't want to sound like it was effortless, but it was, when I read the script, it was very clear to me who this character was and how he should be played. Bill Kelly did a great job of bringing these characters to life on the page. And he wasn't exactly like, you know, the princes from, say, Snow White or Cinderella, because those characters, those princes weren't really allowed to have that much personality. So he was always written larger than life, a healthy ego, but it all came from a place of innocence and sincerity. So that sort of, I think, lets his narcissism off the hook.
You remind me a little bit of, even though he was the bad guy in Beauty and the
Gaston. Sort of, yeah, we had Gaston. We had Gaston. Yeah, well, he was written that way, but without the without being a villain.
That's,
you know,
right.
he was always well intentioned. You know, that's what he said when he says, you know, thank you for taking care of my bride peasants. You know, that it wasn't Gaston would say that, and you know that he was making a, you know, a dig. But Prince Edward, he was just genuine. You know, he was just a ditzy, you know, genuine hero. I was going to say that. I was not judgmental of the character. It sounded like a lot of fun, and to me it just sort of clicked. I just felt like I knew who he was, and offered up to Kevin that singing was a hobby of mine, and he indulged us and let us, you know, go in and practice the songs, and then ultimately we qualified to sing in the movie. So
how helpful was it to do the animated part first for you?
It was an interesting process. I always, before I started, I was asking lots of questions about movies like, movies that require actors to go in and do voiceovers, and then there's the animation. I said, which one is first? How does it work? You know, and Kevin reminded me that when we went in and did the voice for the voice work, which took like, you know, 2 hours, he said that, you know, you're locking yourself into a certain degree of your character right now. This is the character's voice. Let's find that, and you know. And luckily, like I said, you know, Bill Kelly's script was a great blueprint for this character, and you know, it just felt like natural to, you know, to declare everything needed to be declared and sung, and you know, so, and it, like I said, it was you know, a larger than life, but then, even with that, once we got it up on its feet and got into the costume and everything, you know, it was allowed. We were allowed to, you know, to have fun with the characters. And I, you know, a lot of the burden was taken off of me when I realized that whatever I do on set, the animation department has they have the responsibility to match that, because none of the animation was done before we started the live action shooting.
Just the
voiceover, just the voice work. There were sketches of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
There was a still image of what the character would look like. But that was it, you know. And Kevin did show us like almost like a flip book, you know, those animation flip books of like the first 12 minutes. Uh-huh. Black and white, you know, still images, but it was never fully animated or fully alive. So it was great. We actually were given, you know, a pretty good amount of creative license to do what we wanted to do within, you know, certain Disney parameters, and then the animators would go and animate the characters.
Were you on top of that bus at all, or were you trampled by those cyclists at all?
Well, I was on the bus for I think 3 or 4 days. And I kept thinking, well, I could be mortified, and this could traumatize me for the rest of my life, you know, like in the nightmarish way. Or I could enjoy it, and I just kept thinking, when am I ever going to get to do this again? Like I can safely say that I don't think anyone's ever done this before. You know, in tights and puffy sleeves, stabbing a bus in the middle of Times Square. Like I'm the first. So,
did you notice the Superman Returns billboard?
As soon as I climbed up on top of the bus. And at the time, I didn't know I was doing Hairspray. There was also a giant Broadway Hairspray billboard, so someone was looking out for me, putting my resume in the background. But what was this?
The Cyclist. Did you get right?
Oh, The Cyclist. That's right. I'm sorry. That was the last shot of the movie for me. That was my very last shot, and the stuntmen, you know, because they're told to, are usually very delicate with actors. The first couple of takes, the bicyclist would sort of bump me, and I would have to, you know, fake a fall. And on playback, we watched it back, and it just wasn't that funny. And I said, just take me out. I said, because if I get hurt, you know. First of all, it's funnier. Second, the movie's in the can, so, you know, there's not going to be any sort of insurance claims taken out. So, and he, you know, knocked the hell out of me. But it's funnier, you know. My voice squeaks, and I mean, he just knocks me down. But there was a pad in front of me. And actually, the prince's suit is pretty padded, too. Built-in airbags.
Musicals are now almost permanent thing in your future. Do you want to do more of that?
Well, you know, I don't want to like overstay my welcome in any genre. You know, I don't want to, but I really did enjoy these two films, Enchanted and Hairspray, and it was something just they were just completely different than anything I've ever done before. And like I said, the singing has always been a hobby of mine. So to have the opportunity to do it in an acting job was a lot of fun, and both of them were fun. So I would. I would do it again for sure, but you know, in the same breath, I would also say that to me, creatively, it's always more interesting to do something completely different, which is why I'm doing this dark psychological thriller starting in a couple of weeks. It's a movie called The Box that Richard Kelly is directing with Cameron Diaz, and I play a married couple based on a short story that was turned into a Twilight Zone episode about a couple that receive this strange box from this very odd man with a button in the middle that said, if you push the button, someone you don't know will die, but you get this certain sum of money.
So what happens next? Because we've all heard that premise, like how is it a 90-minute or 2-hour movie once you set up that scenario?
I'd be giving away the movie if I told you, but you'll just have to see. There's, you know, Richard's really... He's really great. Obviously, I just now got to know him, but when I read the script the first time, there were more elements put into the script that existed outside of just that premise. Like, I'm getting in trouble. I can't get descriptive, but it works. Trust me.
He describes it as his more mainstream thriller type of movie, but I can't imagine he'll really do something without weirdness. So can you mention any kind of weirdness he might have attached to it?
I can't without giving things away, really. I mean, really, I just start to think of the descriptive, actually, you know, things that happen in the movie that don't seem very mainstream. And then a lot of it does, but to me, it's a lot more intelligent than just your regular mainstream I don't like genres, but I guess you would call it a psychological thriller.
Is it a two-hander, though, between you and Cameron? Is that the name?
It's Cameron. Cameron and I play the married couple that are basically put through this morality test. And Frank Langella is playing the gentleman who presents us with the box.
But it's the majority of the action, just two actors discussing.
I don't want to give anything away.
Okay. Is it safe to say this is way less over the top than your last two? Is it a subtle performance?
Yes, I would say probably if Enchanted and Hairspray are like a 9, I would say this is probably around the 5 or 6-ish.
Have you guys seen the stock date for a Superman sequel?
No, I have no idea.
Are you looking forward? Sorry.
No, it's okay. No.
Angela said that he was told that there was a start, that he was sort of told a start date of sometime late next year, but I guess you haven't, nobody said anything.
I don't know. I really don't know. They haven't told me anything. If they told Frank something, I've learned not to even speculate about these movies because they just, everything changes, and really the actors are usually the last people to know. I go online to get my information.
And you've got this romantic comedy coming up with Katherine Heigl. Can you talk a little bit about that and what you
did? Yeah, that's about an 8. Right, but I get the girl. It's a romantic comedy with Catherine that I was likened to, like When Harry Met Sally. It's a girl who's described as a compulsive bridesmaid, because she's obsessed with love and weddings and going to weddings, and she's been a bridesmaid 27 times, and she keeps every one of her dresses. And I play a journalist who is, he's trying to get out of the commitments or vows section of the paper to get into the more legitimate newsroom. So he writes these, these what most women think are these beautiful, sections in the paper. But he thinks it's all, he's a very cynical guy. He thinks it's all crap. He just does it to make money to get him up. So he meets this girl and discovers that she's this perpetual bridesmaid and thinks it's very interesting. So he does this expose. He was planning this expose about her to be the article to put him into the real newsroom. And then through the course of that, they sort of become friends. And it's a very complicated, very twisty plot. But that's sort of the premise of it.
Mm-hmm. What about dancing in this film? Were you up for that, or was that a new thing?
I was up for it. I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm that comfortable doing all of the dancing. I'm more comfortable singing, and the dancing in Hairspray was the same thing. I really had to, I didn't have to do that much in Hairspray or in this movie, but we treated it as though I was going to have to do a lot of dancing. So there were extensive rehearsals with John O'Connell, the choreographer who did Moulin Rouge, and for Enchanted. And so we had to learn the proper sort of what's called the Viennese waltz. And he said, and he's Australian, he said, James, the prince has got to know how to do the perfect Viennese waltz. So we got it, yeah. So he goes, you have to be perfect, So I actually had more lessons than Patrick, but at the end of the movie, like, it's Patrick and Amy doing the dancing. But he said, a prince has to know how to do the exact,
What about the not there?
I love that man, by the way. That's why I can do this.
What about the chipmunk that's not there? Was it the director running around squeaking, or did you get used to
it? It was Kevin running around squeaking. It was first of all, there were a lot of times there was nothing there, so you were acting to nothing. When I grab him, you just sort of have to, imagine there's something there. But they also had a little stuffed chipmunk on the end of a stick. They would, Yeah, and then.
Did you see a drawing of what it was going to look like? Right?
Yeah, they would come to the set with a laptop computer and show us like 10-second test of the chipmunk and what he would look like. And so you think, you just call upon that when you're, But it's like you're standing there acting to nothing, and I don't know. If the prince doesn't think he's talking, he doesn't really understand what he's saying most of the time anyway. So.
You recorded some songs to show your director that you could sing. Why Sinatra and which songs?
Well, there were Sinatra songs mainly because they were the only recordings I had were the recordings of me singing those songs for Ally McBeal. So I had David Kelly, I did I think 13 episodes of that show, and he had me singing in the bar a lot. So I was doing Dean Martin, Sinatra. So and then I had the recordings on a disc, and I just sent them to Kevin, because it was the only thing I had that was recorded. Oh, and it was, what were the songs? Ladies a Tramp and I've Got the World on a String or something. I can't remember. Very different than this style of singing in this movie.
Would you say you're romantic like Prince Edward, or are you more practical? What do you think when it comes to love?
It's kind of hard to pick. I think I'm somewhere in between. I'm not like a, I guess because I am pretty practical and I can be fairly cynical, but I also like to think that I can be romantic because I'm disillusioned. But no, I don't. I guess when I describe it, my romantic acts don't usually take the form of rose petals on the floor and chocolates and all of those things that seem sort of romance 101. My wife thinks I'm romantic if I get up with the crying baby and let her sleep in.
Right.
Or all the thank you, ladies. That's good. That's a good one. So it's to me, it's just romance is thoughtful acts for someone you love, and that could be filling her car up with gas or making her a coffee or But very early on in our relationship, there was lots of serenading and on the beach and things like that, and then. Yeah. Then once you have kids.
Does the impending strike affect your future work plans? Or are you, after the box is down, are you going to take some time off?
Well, I'm scheduled to do another film after that called The Sex Drive with Josh Zuckerman.
Right.
And it comes right after. It's another comedy, but it's in the vein of Superbad. And
who has the sex drive?
Well, it's the young my younger brother actually has this online relationship with this girl, and he misinterprets what she writes to him. So he thinks she's saying, if you drive to where I am, I'll have sex with you. So, and I play his older brother, who's kind of a redneck, drives like a classic car and makes fun of him. He's sort of like, if you remember Weird Science, like Bill Paxton's role and Chet, and so something very different. But
about 8 or 9.
Yeah, it's back up
there.
Where I'm comfortable.
Is it cool to have you finished with that?
Oh, I was gonna say, so at the moment it's not affecting it, but you know, I think we're all gonna be affected by it if it becomes a reality. Right now, at the moment, it looks like a reality.
Monday, apparently.
And Monday, right. So, I just keep my fingers crossed and hope that, because I'm not in on all of these talks and negotiations, and hopefully that will be ironed out and everyone will be happy. But
last question.
You've had an action figure before, but what was it like having a doll for this, and are your kids into that?
I haven't seen the doll for this. I don't know that there is. I don't know that there is one.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, do you mean to change this?
No.
Okay. Well, I having gone through that with the X-Men films, it was exciting when that happened, and you know, the side of Dr. Pepper cans, and it was very surreal, and you know, but honestly, I thought that was going to be the last of it, you know, because when am I going to get to do this again? But you know, I wish I could describe it. I'm just so honored, and like, it's very flattering, and you know, but I'm always thinking, how am I going to top this? How are you going to, you know, you've done the superhero and you've done the iconic Disney character, and it's just, I just feel really, really, really lucky.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.